Welcome to another podcast episode of DIY Guitar Making. I also produce video episodes of DIY Guitar Making live in the workshop. To find both the podcasts and the videos all in one place, go to DIYGuitarMaking.com. You can even subscribe to the email list there to receive new episodes, both the videos and the podcasts, directly in your inbox as they come out. Again, that's DIYGuitarMaking.com. Hello, friends. Welcome back to DIY Guitar Making. And let me see if I can play guitar as I'm introducing the podcast here. I've never tried this before. Anyway, I'm just having a little fun. Noodling. So anyway, let's see, what are we doing? Welcome back to the show. It's Monday. I had a great week last week because I had a workshop. Great guy, Jerry, came out and we built a orchestra model, black walnut back and sides, Western red cedar topped guitar, wonderful instrument. The execution by me and Jerry, and mostly Jerry. Jerry's really the student. He's building the guitar. The execution was pretty damn flawless. There wasn't a lot of sort of cleanup and gap filling and stuff like that. We had to do it at the end. It was a pretty clean and easygoing class. So anyway, that was fun. Future classes, if you want to get in on one of these workshops, the schedule for the dates, we have dates in the summer now, which we didn't have before. So you guys who have off in the summer, that's an opportunity for you, students and teachers. Check that out. Schedule's online at ericschaferguitars.com. If you like what I do here, go to ericschaferguitars.com. You can sign up for a workshop or one of my online courses. But we're here for Q&A. Let's get right into Q&A. We're going to first jump into the members forum. The way you get into the members forum, by the way, it's a private members forum for students of my online courses and the hands-on workshops. So if you've ever taken a workshop from me, you're in the members forum, or if you've signed up for one of my online courses. All right, so let's jump in there. All right, first question I have comes from Larry Kuhn. Larry writes, I'm nearing the end of my next to last bottle of LMI instrument glue. Once the last bottle is gone, I'm going to have to switch to something else. What do you all use? Hide glue, tight bond? Let me know any recommendations. Well, Larry, I use tight bond. I've always used tight bond. I will say though, because you mentioned hide glue there, for the longest time I've considered bringing hide glue into the fold simply for the bridge glue up and the fretboard tongue glue up. And honestly, I think if you're really like, I like where you're at because you're at sort of a crossroads here where you have to make a decision. You've run out of glue, right? So you can do the most optimal thing, if that makes sense. You're not married to any particular glue. You have to get used to a new glue anyway. So you might as well, I think, do what I'm going to say next, which is learn to use hide glue and use it for the bridge and fretboard tongue. And then just use tight bond for everything else because tight bond is easier and quicker. You don't have to heat it up. Okay. I don't do that right now, but I at some point would like to make the transition and learn hide glue a little bit better so that I can glue my bridges and fretboard tongues down with hide glue. Now, the reason just those two things is because hide glue is much more reversible than tight bond. You can reverse tight bond and remove those joints. It's just harder and more potentially more damaging to the instrument. So it behooves you if you're building an heirloom or a lifetime or more than a lifetime generational instrument, it behooves you to make the bridge and the fretboard tongue, hence the neck joint, more reversible. So that's my thoughts on that. Or just go with tight bond, right? If you're not trying to do the absolute perfect thing, tight bond's fine. Like I it's fine for bridges and fretboard tongues. It's just the repair person who has to do a neck reset on your guitar is going to like you more if you use hide glue. Okay? It's not, don't buy into any of the hide glue has magical acoustic properties BS. It's really more reversible, so it's less permanent, and that's a good thing on heirloom instruments. Let's read what other people have to say. LC Guitars writes, I use Tight Bond Original for 95% of my glue-ups and fish glue for anything I need a longer working time, such as binding and gluing in the frets. Okay, that's great. Yeah, I've heard great things about fish glue for the reason he mentions there. I've never tried it myself. That sounds great to me. Patrick writes, I just ran out too. I'm now using Tight Bond. There is a rumor, that Stu Mac might sell LMI's glue in the future. Okay, interesting. So what's the, this is a genuine question, not a rhetorical question. What's the deal with LMI's glue? Is there anything special or different from Tight Bond, or is it just repackaged Tight Bond, right? Is it just PVA glue? Or is there something, is there a reason why we need the LMI glue aside from it's what we've always known and brand loyalty and all that? Genuine question. I'm not planting that seed in anyone's mind. I don't know. So someone please tell me if there was something we really lost with losing LMI's glue. Okay. Let's go to the next question. Let's see what we got. Okay. All right. Next question comes from Rob. And Rob writes, I'd like to use a herringbone purfling. Its thickness is close to that of the top, so I'll likely be grooving the top down to the kerfing. I'm concerned that there'll be insufficient top to kerfing glue surface remaining. I appreciate any suggestions. Yes, you should be concerned about that. It's simple. Don't groove your top all the way down to the kerfing. There's no need to do that, and you shouldn't do that. The purfling is simply a thin inlay, and it just needs to be in deep enough so that when you sand it back, you're not going to sand through it. So it really just surface level needs to be in there. So there's absolutely no need to cut your purfling ledge all the way down to the kerfing, and you should not do that, okay? I want to be very clear about that. When you get your herringbone purfling or whatever purfling you're using, it's going to be at a certain thickness. That thickness is not the should not be the intended depth of your channel. You can make your channel and should make your channel much, much less deep, okay? Off the top of my head, I mean, I don't really think in terms of millimeters or thousandths of an inch when I'm inlaying these. I just eyeball it, but it's probably like 40 thousandths of an inch, perhaps, which is far less than the thickness of your top, unless you went way, way, way too far thinning out your top, obviously. But yeah, definitely don't cut your kerfing all the way down through the top, okay? And you you know what? You might be thinning out your tops too much, even if it's not to 40 thousandths of an inch, if you're thinning it to 80 thousandths of an inch or something like that. Yeah, that's a little too thin, and that's going to be a little scary cutting your purfling channel and getting your purfling in there. So maybe don't thin your tops out too much if this is a big concern. Okay, and Rob also has some shared progress here. He writes, tail and neck blocks glued in, kerfing installed and radiused. Now on to brace carving. Okay, great. We got a picture of it up there. Yeah, that looks great. Well done. Awesome, Rob. And as always, Patrick has a lot of progress. He's always posting his progress, which is awesome. And it's always at a bewildering pace here. So I can't keep up with all of it. He writes, now the real work on this one begins, buffing, fret dress, nut slotting, bridge saddle height, and bridge pin reaming. And he's got some pictures here. Zeracote and Redwood guitar. All right. Good stuff, Patrick. I wish I had more to say about that, but it just in both cases, it looks like you guys are moving along, and that's great. Okay, here's one from Patrick. Patrick writes, I've been thinking about my next build. I have an insane Koa set. See picture, and I'll throw the picture up there. It is pretty insane. It's got some really sweet sapwood in there. See picture, the top and back and sides match. I saw this picture of turquoise used on a guitar, and he has a picture of that as well. Has anyone used turquoise? I kind of like the idea, but I'm not sure. Also, there are going to be some really nice offcuts with sapwood and spalting that I could use for a radial rosette. What are your thoughts? This set deserves something special. I agree that it deserves something special. Yeah, I think the radial rosette with the offcuts I've done, you guys may have seen from some of the guitars that I've posted, I've done some cool things with radial rosettes using the sapwood in the radial pattern. You can have a lot of fun with that, let's say. Turquoise, I have never used it. I want to use it. I think it looks really, really stunning in the picture that you've posted there. Hopefully somebody else can give us some insight on using it. But yeah, I don't have anything to say as far as how to use it. I just want to use it now that you're bringing that up, Patrick. So anybody out there, please help us out. Tell us about your experiences with turquoise. And LC Guitars has some pictures from the Altoona Guitar Show that LC Guitars went to and I went to as well. That's great because I didn't take a single picture while I was there. So he took some pictures. I'll throw them up here. He's got his guitars. He's got my guitars in the pictures. Yeah, it was a great time. You know, the Altoona Guitar Show, it's called the best guitar show. It's kind of a stupid name, honestly. But it was a pretty damn good guitar show, so the name works out. And it was really refreshing to go to what I can only describe as a guitar player's guitar show. And that might sound silly to some of you guys. Aren't all guitar shows for guitar players? But a lot of the acoustic, high-end acoustic guitar, boutique-type guitar shows, like the Woodstock show, like the Artisan Guitar Show in Harrisburg, these are amazing shows. I mean, they're showcasing like the best stuff, but I don't get the sense. It feels like there's a 50-50 split between actual players walking around at the show and just other woodworkers, luthiers, builders, and maybe even collectors walking around. And so you just don't have as many people picking up your guitars and playing them. And it's a different vibe that way when they're just kind of looking at the guitars and asking you questions about, you know, cutting, purfling channels and stuff, which I love to answer. But it's really fun to have a guitar show where people are genuinely, well, one, it's nice. People are genuinely picking up your guitars with the potential intent to actually buy them and walk out the door with them. And that's cool. Don't get me wrong. But also just the sort of vibe of being able to sit down and play with these other players. So I got to play guitar a lot myself with some of the players out there. And I don't know. I just like it. I like it. So I'm going to do more of that. I'm going to do more shows beyond the straight up acoustic guitar boutique, let's say cork sniffing shows, if you guys are familiar with that term. There's a lot of cork sniffery at those shows, which is what it is. All right, anyway, let's move on from that. So I think that's pretty good for the members forum. Like I said, there really wasn't a lot in there. Let's jump over to YouTube. And we have a comment from Michael Elwell. And this is in response to the last Q&A where I talked about, or someone asked about, finding an alternative for the Teflon strips that LMI used to sell because we can't get them anymore. Now, me personally, I actually have a bunch of Teflon strips just because I bought them well before they even announced that LMI was closing. I just wanted to have them on hand for several jobs. And so I'm good, but someone, I forget who, was asking where to get those, and I didn't have a good answer, so I kicked it out to you guys. And Michael writes, waxed wood strips can be used like Teflon strips. Stacking veneer strips that have been well waxed aren't too difficult to manipulate. I use paste wax as a release agent and wipe off the excess to avoid contamination of adjacent surfaces. Well, there you go. That sounds great. That's a great idea, I think. So thank you for that, Michael. And another comment about the Teflon strips. Doc Joe writes, who is also in the members forum, by the way, but he's commenting on YouTube here. He writes, question about the Teflon strips. Where are they now available since LMI has closed? Also, are LMI... Okay, so he's asking the same question. He's just repeating the other person's question from before. I don't know. Actually, I just answered it a second ago that I personally stocked up. So I'm not sure where to get them or even if you can at the moment. But the market is figuring this out. Someone will provide in due time. And V writes, hi, Eric. Thanks for the video. I want to share my experience of thicknessing the top and back and sides. So in the last video, the last Q&A video, we were talking about what thickness we use for tops and for backs. And V writes, firstly, I started with 3 millimeters for the spruce tops and 2.5 for the Sapelli back and sides. Then went to the 2.8 for the tops and 2 millimeters for the back and sides. Still using spruce for the tops and maple or Sapelli for the back and sides. Everything is fine, 12 guitars are made. Okay, now I'm going to make 2.5 millimeter Sitka spruce tops and 1.8 to 2 millimeter Sapelli / maple back and sides. I hope it will be okay, but I should say that I make the V brazing, not X brazing. That's very important because on X brazing, it's quite dangerous to use such thin tops. Okay, that's interesting. Why and V is that the case? I don't know anything about V bracing, really. I know what it is, but I don't know anything beyond the surface level. Why is that the case that it's less dangerous to go very thin, very, very thin? And what you're describing sounds very thin. Why can you get away with going extra thin on V bracing? Please answer that for me. I'd be very interested to know. But other than that, great comment. And thank you for sharing what you do. Great video as always. This is from Julian Taylor. Great video as always with your finishing technique. It's almost like you're French polishing with True Oil. Yeah, that's basically what I'm doing. I'm essentially French polishing with True Oil. That's with, you know, some differences there. So French polish is traditionally a shellac, a method of hand rubbing shellac. But I borrow a lot from the French polishing world to do my True Oil finishes. By the way, I have a course for you guys who don't know on True Oil finishing on my website, ericschaferguitars.com. But yes, it is very much like French polish. Jonah Guitar Guy writes, good system, Eric. He's referencing the video I did recently on making a mold. And he writes, good system, Eric. I hate making molds. Very boring. Yeah, I kind of agree. I get some enjoyment out of it, I guess. But by and large, there's a lot of repetitive activity there. He goes on, I think the dowels are a great workaround to fix the problem with the screws pulling out, but one could, since you are already using machine screws, drill through the mold and nut them on the inside of the mold. Of course, they would need to be countersunk into the mold so they wouldn't interfere with the guitar rims. Very unlikely the screws could pull through the mold. Yes, I completely agree with that, Jonah. That is absolutely a fine way of getting, yeah, the same result. So in that video, I show a method for dealing with the very common problem of the screws pulling out, especially over the long term, if you have molds for, you know, 5-10 years onward, that outward pressure from the spreaders eventually starts to kind of pull the screws out from the latch mechanism. And I love what he said. That's absolutely a way to do it. You can drill the hole all the way through, countersink the inside so it doesn't interfere with the sides themselves, and then put a nut in there so that you're not relying on the threads of the screws anymore. It's the nut that is holding it together, and that won't move. Absolutely. In the video, I showed a different method that involves a dowel. And if you're interested in that, check out the video. Hi, Eric. Thanks so much for this helpful video. A quick question, if I may. I have a dual action rod. It's talking about truss rods. And wondered about the part where you mentioned a little turn goes a long way. Mine seems to work fine, but I was curious why it seems quite loose and very easy to turn in comparison to my other guitars with single action truss rods, and that in both directions, clockwise and counterclockwise, after maybe a full turn. In both directions, clockwise and counterclockwise, after maybe a full turn, it becomes less freely moving and quote unquote bites and starts to tighten. I've never pushed beyond this point, but was wondering if this was one, the full extent of the turn, or whether two, it was the engagement point and that the middle loose feeling section is a neutral stage. Thanks again. Yes, it actually could be either one of those things, unfortunately. See, the problem is I don't know the history of this guitar and how it was built, and it simply could have been poorly built, or the truss rod during its life may have been abused, meaning used too much to the point where it's actually turned. You've reached essentially the end of your range of adjustment, and tightening it further can actually break the rod. That's possible. That requires knowing more about the guitar, knowing the history of the ownership of the guitar as well. But in general, with a well-built guitar, or in my case, because I build guitars, with a guitar that I've just built, so I know how the truss rod went in there, and I know that the truss rod hasn't been overly turned during its life, in that case, what you are describing is what you talked about, which is that engagement point. Actually, I like that phrase you gave there, where there is this neutral zone before you adjust a dual action truss rod in either direction, where the center portion of the truss rod is actually just loosely flopping in there, right? It's just a loose rod of metal, which is actually like why on some guitars you can actually get this ghost vibration from the truss rod if it's not tightened at all. And then you can get rid of that vibration if you notice it and if it bothers you by simply tightening it slightly until the truss rod engages, but not enough to actually move the neck. So anyway, let's see. What I would recommend doing, I don't know, that's tough. I mean, you know the history of this guitar. So it sounds like it's most likely just that engagement point that we talked about. But I don't know, if you bought this used and you don't know what it's been through, then it's hard to say. So I'm going to leave it at that. What you are describing is the engagement point, with the caveat that it could be something else if it has a unknown history or it was built poorly. Okay, I think that's it for today. Not too much today, kind of a short Q&A, guys. But I hope you got something out of it. And hey, if you like what I do, check out my website, check out my courses. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you guys in the next one. Keep building stuff. Bye for now.
If you learned something here, please give this video a like and subscribe so you can be notified when I release a new DIY guitar making video. And if you want to really learn more, take one of my structured online courses at ericschaferguitars.com or register for a hands-on guitar building workshop here with me in Burnville, Pennsylvania.